Good morning, everyone, and welcome back.
It'll be back right here.
It is good to be back. Switching chairs? Well, this morning, what we are going to be doing, first of all, a reminder of some of the committee rules, that additional committee meetings may be scheduled by the chair, that presenters must provide an accessible electronic version of any written materials to be distributed at the committee to the committee administrator and the committee legislative assistant by 5 p.m. the day before the hearing is scheduled, unless it's waived by the chair, and that all substantive amendments must be received by the committee administrator in writing and electronic format 24 hours before the beginning of a scheduled committee hearing. So those are some reminders. This morning we're going to be taking up bills that under House Rule 4.20, which basically says any bills left on the general register from last session would travel back to the committee that they were last in order to be moved back to the general register. So we'll be taking those up quickly this morning first, and then we do have a couple of Bar Association bills that Representative Smith has for us. And so with that, let's see, do we have to approve some minutes? The May 3rd minutes, has anyone had the opportunity to look those over? Representative Smith?
I have, Madam Chair, and I move those minutes.
Thank you for that. Any discussion? All those in favor of approval of the May 3rd minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The minutes are adopted. Representative Lesch.
It's just my observation on those minutes that the last vote that we had in this committee was unanimous, and it was a roll call. So I hope we can continue with that tradition.
That's a nice point. So I'm sure that means you're going to be voting for all of our bills. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the next item on the agenda, and are you intending to do each of those one at a time or as a group? Because I'd like to remove House File 923 and have a little bit of a discussion about that, Madam Chair.
We're going to be doing those individually.
Okay, thank you.
So with that, we will start with House File 1243. I move House File 1243 before the committee and recommend that it be re-referred to the General Register. I would like to move an oral amendment to change the effective date from January 1st, 2018, which is already passed, to January 1st, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. I renew my motion that House File 1243, as amended, be sent to the General Register. Those in favor of the motion to send 1243, as amended, to the General Register, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The bill is on its way. The next file is House File 1876. I move that House File 1876, I move it before the committee and recommend that it be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor of the motion to send House File 1876 to the General Register, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The bill is on its way. I move House File 2067 before the committee and recommend that it be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor of the motion to send House File 2067 to the General Register, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. The bill is on its way. Okay. Last night, regarding House File 857, we received an amendment. The page would want to come forward. We received an amendment from from the reviser's office. One section of House File 857, I know, went into the omnibus HHS bill last year. So this bill in its current form needs to have this amendment applied to it. Was there also a change in the effective date?
For the commission.
Okay. All right. And there was another effective date, as you will see there, that needed to be be changed. So we did receive that later in the evening last night around 5, and It is a technical, fully technical in nature bill or amendment. So any discussion on the amendment, Representative Lesh?
Madam Chair, no objections.
Okay, thank you. Right, and another little turn on this bill. StateGov Finance has requested to see this bill. So that is that will be the motion. That for some reason they want to see this. So any other discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A18 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The A18 is adopted. I move House File 857 before the committee and recommend that it be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee as amended. Those in favor of the motion to send House File 857 to the State Gov Finance Committee, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion is adopted. The bill is on its way. I move House File 1249 before the committee and recommend that it be re-referred to the General Register. Those in favor of the motion to send House File 1249 to the General Register, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
The bill is on its way. House File 1847. I move House File 1847 before the committee and recommend that it be re-referred to the General Register. Those in favor of the motion to send House File 1847 to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The bill is on its way. House File 923 is before us. I'd like to move that before the committee and recommend that it be re-referred to the General Register. And there is an oral amendment to change the effective date. So, Representative Hillstrom, if we could adopt that oral amendment first, and then I'll go to you. The effective date would need to be changed from August 1st, 2017 to August 1st, 2018. All those in favor of the amendment's adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The bill is in correct shape. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this bill is an attorney's fees award, but it's specifically about sexual harassment. And as we learned yesterday in our sexual harassment training, sometimes what people want is for behavior to change, not necessarily money. This bill, as currently drafted, 923, would specifically say that if you sue in court, the only attorney's fee award that you can get is based on the money, not based on any other change that you might receive. And so I think in light of what's changed since last year, I think this committee should spend some more time on this bill. And, Madam Chair, I would actually ask that we leave it here, that we have another hearing on it, and have discussion in light of what's happened since last session.
Is there any other discussion on this bill? Okay. Representative Hillstrom, I think that we need to move this bill onto the General Register. It can be amended on the floor. Does anyone else have any discussion regarding that? Representative Hillstrom?
Yeah. If it's going to move, Madam Chair, I just would like a roll call vote then.
Okay. Representative Lesh?
Madam Chair, I agree with Representative Hillstrom. The implications of sexual harassment that we have seen over the course of the past 6 months are far-reaching. And I don't suspect that this was the intent of Representative Knobloch when he put this in, and maybe it was, I don't know, but it has, I think, really adverse consequences for the development of how we approach sexual harassment. And I would think that for most folks, including my friends, and as Eric Lipman used to say, in the party opposite, would want there to be some ability to end conduct without huge payouts. Because what essentially now we're encouraging is that if you're going to sue someone, you have to sue them for a lot of money. You can't just sue them to get the conduct to stop or some injunctive relief. And I think we want that for victims of sexual harassment, but we probably also want those for employers so that they can say, oh, well, okay, I didn't think I did it, but maybe I did, so we'll stop. So I just I agree with her, and I wonder if we considered that. I don't recall the discussion last time that this went through. Did we talk about that at all? I don't know. But I think we should talk about it again today.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just reading the bill again as well. And so on lines 1-6 and 1-7, it says, if an offer of judgment is made by a party under Rule 68 of the Rules of Civil Procedure to a party who claims money damages in whole or in part. So they could be claiming money in whole or in part. So to me, the way I read this, someone would still be able to be awarded attorney's fees if they were claiming damages pursuant, not monetarily, but any clarification on that would be appreciated.
Right, right. Thank you, Representative Whalen. Representative Lesch?
Madam Chair, and I think Representative Whalen is right, but, you know, okay, so those of you who know that I prosecuted for 15 years, right? I just got into private practice, and I've done some personal injury work. And it's remarkable what I hear when people come into my office about what they want. You know, I say to them, you could be getting, you know, this much money under this statute for these damages. And certain people say, no. Then I look like I'm out for money, and they feel dirty about it. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I'd get paid more, but whatever. Okay, that's what you want. But let's go with that, because I'm there to do what I need to do for my clients. So, yes, if it's injunctive relief in part and damages in part, that's okay. But there are legitimately a lot of people that I honestly didn't have a lot of knowledge or awareness of before I started my own law practice that don't want that. They want to get paid, you know, for their attorney's hours and stuff and the costs they put in, but they don't want a big payday. They're frustrated about the situation, at least when I talk to them. That's not everyone, but that's just certain people, and this would preclude them from what they would see as justice in a way that actually would benefit probably the employer more, I think, too. So that's why I brought it up.
Oh, Representative Lunin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The discussion we had when we first saw this bill did touch on this, but not in the light of sexual harassment, but actually what was brought up by, it was Representative Lesch, had to do with discrimination. Cases that involved discrimination didn't have a monetary aspect to it or a strong monetary aspect to it. So we've actually did kind of factor that in when we voted last time.
Thank
non-monetary
you.
Issues.
Thank you for that recollection, sharing that recollection. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if we could get an opinion from our staff, the nonpartisan legislative staff, so that we can hear from them the interpretation. Because it does say in part, it doesn't have to be in whole and monetary.
Thank you for that. Ms. Mullen.
Chair and members, looking at line 1.9, and it says that if they do not obtain a verdict in excess of the offer, so I don't know if the court would look at the offer in its totality as far as monetary and non-monetary awards, but I think that would be up to the court to decide how they determined that. So it would be a judicial discretion issue as far as how they value what the offer was and whether or not that offer is in excess of what the settlement offer was.
And Ms. Mullen, there's nothing in this bill that would prohibit a person from asking for some monetary damages and some other changes in behavior type things that they could ask for as well in a lawsuit?
No, Chair and members, it would not change what could be offered or what kind of settlements they could discuss or ultimately what the verdict would be. It would be a balancing test by the court to decide if those things were of similar monetary value.
In light of that, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to give a real relevant example. So we've had sexual harassment here, and say someone filed a lawsuit and filed it against the House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives made an offer, and it was of monetary value because that's what they could control. I promise that I will give you $10,000 if you make this case go away. And the person said, no, because that's not what I want. I want a resignation of a member, but that's not something that the Minnesota House can control. So in the event the person said, okay, I will settle for you paying my attorney's fees as long as that person resigns, they would not be awarded attorney's fees under this language because they didn't get more money than the offer.
Members, I feel like this was a procedural vote, and Representative Knobloch is not here to defend his bill. And so with that, we will lay the bill over. And I'm telling you right now that if I talk to Representative Knobloch and he's not interested in revisiting this, then we'll be back just to make the procedural vote again to move it back to the floor. So with that, the bill's laid over. We will move on to Representative Smith, House File 2764. Before you get started, Representative Smith, I wanted to introduce some new staff members that we have. I failed to do that at the beginning. Our new committee legislative assistant is Abby Groof, and our new GOP researcher is Lori Cusno. So I welcome them. And also, we have a new page. What is your name?
Jeff.
Did you say Jeff?
Joe,
thanks for being here, Joe. Is this your first gig at the Capitol?
It is, yes.
Well, welcome. Welcome. Oh, and we have Maddie as well, who is also a new page for the committee. Okay, very good. Welcome, and hopefully we'll make your jobs as pleasant as possible in this committee. Representative Smith, to your bill, would you like to move it?
Yes, Madam Chair, good morning. I move House File 2764 before this committee.
All right. Representative Smith, are there any amendments?
Yes, Madam Chair, there is an author's amendment labeled H2764A1.
Mm-hmm. And would you like to move that?
Yes,
amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Do you want to explain what the A1 does? Is it just technical in nature?
Yes, just technical in nature, Madam
okay.
Chair.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the A1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Representative Smith, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Good morning. This first bill of substance, I hope you all have a fresh cup of coffee because it is very, very exciting. This bill, the intent of this bill is to modernize the Minnesota statutes in this a small bill, and I have a couple of testifiers that I'd like to have speak to the bill, Madam Chair. If Ms. Kim Lowe could speak first, that would be
wonderful. Please introduce yourself for the tape and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kim Lowe, and I'm a business law attorney from the Twin Cities. I'm also a member of the MSBA drafting committees that work on these various acts that we're going to talk about today.
Okay, perfect. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With me is also Jonathan Igren. He's going to take part of these acts. I'm going to take the ones that impact or the changes that impact the Limited Partnership Act, the Nonprofit Act, the LLC Act, and then the Uniform Partnership Act. And then Jonathan will cover the acts that the changes that cover the Business Act. They are a package, but we want to talk about them slightly differently.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The changes that are being proposed to the LLC, LLP, UAP and the nonprofit statute really are technical in nature, and they're really dealing with some changes we made last year with respect to conversions and domestications. And we're just harmonizing the acts across all of the acts so the language is similar, the processes are similar, so that they're less confusing for users and for lawyers when they deal with the different types of entities. And so that's really the changes that are here when you look at domestication and conversions. With respect to the nonprofit statute and the LLC statute, we're clarifying the ability of these type of entities that have wholly owned subsidiaries to very easily merge them up. We made these changes last year to the nonprofit statute. We were making corresponding changes to the LLC statute, and we're just making sure the language works with each of them. We're also asking that there be a change with respect to LLCs that were formed under our old LLC Act that have been statutorily or administratively terminated, and that they can come back alive under the new LLC Act, which went in effect last year. There's also a request that we have a uniform fee base for all different types, across all the different entities. Right now, they're not uniform, and the request would be that they be uniform at $60 for each type of entities for mergers. And that's on the other types of entities, and Jonathan will pick up the 302A.
Thank you for your comments. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jonathan Nigren. I'm also a business attorney in the Twin Cities.
Could you repeat your last name, please?
Sorry. Jonathan Nigren. business law attorney in the Twin Cities, and I am also a member of the drafting committee and the legislative coordinator for the business law section of the state bar. I'm going to talk very briefly about 302A changes, the Minnesota Business Corporations Act. Most of these changes are also technical in nature, such as the changes relating to written actions. There are a few substantive highlights I would like to point out for the committee. The first, this bill would authorize so-called medium form mergers, and that's in the public company context when there's a tender offer, which is a way for an acquirer to acquire shares from shareholders if they acquire a majority or a higher threshold that is required to approve a second step merger. It would streamline the process so that the second step merger could be closed immediately and the shareholders would get their money more quickly. It's a very helpful change. It follows an amendment to the Delaware Business Corporation Act in 2013. A second change would authorize exclusive forum bylaws. This is a good thing. It allows corporations in Minnesota to elect in their bylaws to require that all the internal affairs of the corporation be decided by Minnesota courts. So we think that has value for business corporations. And then the last substantive change to highlight is this bill would delegate authority to issue shares such as restricted stock. A board of directors could put guardrails around what type of shares and how many and timing so that, for example, a CEO could actually issue those shares to employees. This is very similar to a 2000 amendment that was made to stock options. Compensation practices for employees and executives has changed over time, so this really is just bringing issuance of restricted shares in line with the way the statute currently permits options to be treated.
Perfect. Are there any questions for either of the testifiers? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really quickly, you had said you're standardizing the fees to $60. What are the fees currently?
Ms. Lowe.
Madam Chair. Currently, the fees for the LLC is $35 and $60 for the corporate statutes. And I believe the LLP, all the partnerships, are $35 or $60. So they're just not the same across the different types of entities. So the thought is to ease that so they're all the same versus them. Because right now, someone has to go figure out what the fee is. It's not convenient for someone to know that the LLC fee for this type of transaction is different than it is for a corporation. So the goal is to really have it much more user-friendly and ease because of the disconnect in the fees.
Representative O'Neill, follow-up? Okay. Any other questions for the testifier? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for you. Where is this bill going next?
Oh, I'm sorry. This bill is going to Commerce Committee.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions? If not, thank you for your testimony. The chair, or Representative Smith, renews his motion. Where did it go? That House File 2764, as amended, go to the Commerce, be re-referred to the Commerce Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. The bill is on its way. And Representative Smith, I didn't fall asleep at all during that. So, and I don't drink coffee. So.
That's a good sign, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Smith, House File 2743, would you like to move that?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House File 2743 before this committee.
And the recommendation is it goes to the General Register. Representative Smith, is there an amendment?
Yes, there is, Madam Chair. There is an amendment labeled A1, author's amendment.
Okay, would you like to move that amendment?
I would like to move Amendment A1. There's been some discussion about this bill, and the intent of this bill is to be a consensus, and this is language as a result of those discussions, Madam Chair.
Okay, very good. Any discussion on the amendment from members? Seeing none, all of those in favor of amending House File 2743 with the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Representative Smith, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 2743 is a bill that deals with a problem that attorneys have identified where under certain construction defect claims, current law forces unnecessary litigation, which, to be candid, is only good for attorneys. We are here against our better interest. And to explain this further, I'd like to have Mr. Scott Andreessen speak to some specific elements of the bill, Madam Chair.
Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Andreessen. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Scott Andreessen from the Bassford Remley Law Firm. I'm a construction law attorney. I'm a member of the MSBA Construction Law Section Council and was part of the group that debated, discussed this particular case and this problem and what we could do to solve it within our group. It is a very limited in nature revision to Section 541.051, which is the statute of limitations and statute of repose that apply in construction cases, or in fact, relative to claims related to improvements to real property. What was discovered is the way the law had been drafted was interpreted in a case called 328 Berry by the Court of Appeals to be such that you could have a scenario where, let's say, you had a five-year-long construction project like U.S. Bank Stadium. A problem comes up in year one of that project. Everybody knows that it's a problem. Everybody assumes that that problem is going to get fixed during the course of the construction project. But under the statute as it was written, the cause of action started to accrue the day that everybody first discovered that problem, and the statute of limitations was 2 years. So in a five-year construction project, you had a scenario where people were having to sue each other before the project was over, or put some sort of complicated legal agreement in place to avoid that. This is what happened in 328 Berry. It wasn't a five-year project, but it was a three-year project, and there was some early problems with the way the windows were installed, caught by the architect. They said, hey, there's a problem with the way the windows were installed. Everybody assumed it had been fixed, and it would be fixed pursuant to a punch list problem. Later, it turns out it wasn't fixed. Long within 2 years after this building had been completed, a lawsuit was started because things weren't getting taken care of. And the argument was made, wait a minute, you knew 3.5 years ago during construction that this window wasn't put in properly. It's right here on this list. And the response was, well, of course it was, but then everybody said it was fixed. So I didn't think I had to sue anybody until my windows leaked sometime later. Our amendment just seeks to address that issue and that issue only. All it does is it says, with respect to claims for property damage. So another thing to be clear, we're not adjusting any statute of limitations related to a personal injury claim, an accident that happens on a construction site. That is still tied to 2 years from discovery of the injury. But when it comes to property damage claims, what we're saying is we're not going to have the statute of limitations start to accrue until the earlier of substantial completion of the project, abandonment, or termination. Those are all terms of art within the construction industry and within the contracts. We are not, however, to be clear, trying to prevent people from suing within that time frame if they feel they need to. If the developer feels like they're not getting what they need, we're not keeping them from doing that, which is why the language says on the top of the paragraph C, for purposes of paragraph A, okay, this is now in the bill, paragraph A is the statute of limitations. For purposes of paragraph A cause of action accrues, and then it lists it, okay? So we're not trying to keep people from being able to sue during that window if they choose. We're simply trying to give them an opportunity that they don't have to sue each other within the project confines if they can get it resolved within that time. That's what this does. It's very narrow. It was, I believe, we've answered all of the questions that have come to Representative Smith and to, you know, the section about this. One of them was the amendment that was just passed. That was a really, quite frankly, a Scrivener's error and an unintended consequence, which has been fixed. I'm happy to answer any questions that people have.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair and sir. You, I think, just could have written a great treatise on the problems with statutes of repose. Okay? You put these statutes of repose in saying that, you know, you can't sue any time after this, which forces people to sue. And you say, no, those are still good, but we're going to draft this convoluted language to say it's substantially completed and everything. Just bump out the statute of repose or get rid of it. I mean, when people, that way you won't force people to do this, and then people have better access to justice. Why don't you just do that?
Representative Lesh, Madam Chair. So we're not There's a difference between the statute of limitations and the statute of repose. The statute of repose is 10 years. This legislation has nothing to do with the statute of repose. It doesn't shorten it. It doesn't affect it at all. So there's always still 10 years after a building is substantially complete where people can bring lawsuits. This amendment relates to the statute of limitations, which has been set for at least 30 years at 2 years from the time you discover an injury. All we're saying is that the way it was interpreted previously, you could discover an injury during the construction project and start your two-year clock running, and that would actually then cause people to lose rights before a project was over. We're actually trying to make it so that people don't lose their rights during a project, that they have an extended period of time after completion in order to bring those claims if they're unresolved.
Okay, Madam Chair, and it was my understanding that the statute of repose was shorter, which is why you had to draft this language in order to say substantially completed. I think I'm going to have to take a look at it a little bit longer and see, but it still strikes me that you're doing something a little convoluted to solve a problem which could be solved related to not that statute of repose, but the statute of limitations. So that's all for now, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Powell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has any of the builders' associations or the contractors' associations looked at this, and have they been talked to at all?
Is that question to the author or the testifier?
I'll take it to the author.
Okay. Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, this bill has been fully vetted by all the interest groups, and all opposition has come forward, and we've been speaking with everyone.
Any other member questions? Is there anyone, Representative Lesh?
Well, that's what I was going to ask, if there's anyone who's speaking.
Yeah. Anybody in the audience wish to testify for or against the bill? Going once, going twice, no one. So that must be there's peace in the valley. So with that, Representative Smith renews his motion that House File 2743 as amended. Is this General Register? Yeah. Be on its way to the General Register. Anyone? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill's on its way. Thank you. Members, we are adjourned.